Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and this is Our Community. Brookings Core Response Executive Director Diana Cooper joins me as we try to keep tabs on COVID outbreaks, new info on vaccines, as well as the disturbing increase in pediatric cases in our neighborhoods. We also try to keep an eye on what our local officials in the city and the county are up to, which can be a daunting task sometimes. Everything seems to be more difficult during these COVID times, and while it looks like the spike for the Delta variant is considerably decreased, some of us are concerned about the emergence of the new, next, whatever variant is coming up, and going into winter not nearly as careful this year as last, an increase in the flu, which can also be deadly for our older population, especially those in precarious living situations. Hi, Diana. How are you doing?
Good. Just a little bit off my game today. Just a little bit more tired than normal. So hopefully I come through well.
So are you getting any days off anywhere in the world? Are you getting any days off?
Well, I have days
in any
where,
world.
I have days where I'm not doing like direct service with someone. It's just maybe working on my computer, but I don't have any days off right now. I think that, I mean, I absolutely know that's going to change. And it, you know, for a while there, we were doing pretty good where Michelle and I were able to have the weekends off, you know, and then we kind of started with the testing and that led into Saturdays. And now I at least have Saturdays off. But the last couple weeks, no, today I worked and last Saturday I worked. So, you know, I have some days where I'm not seeing people and I'm just kind of working on my computer. But it's going to slow down for me. It's going to get easier.
And I think that the thing that we have a tendency to forget is that if you are a mother, if you have a family, you don't actually really have any days off. I mean, that's reality. And I know Matt is great as a father and he does great with the kids. I mean, I know all that, but there's just something about being a mom and having kids that means that you're never really off.
I heard there was an analogy one time. It was a comedian that was talking, but talking about the difference between kind of fathers and mothers and, you know, that if they were relating dads to forks, I think, and said something about, you know, a fork is not a good spoon. And so Matt's a good fork, but he's not a good spoon. But he's
and
a great, great dad.
And the spoons catch all the drips. You know, I mean, that's kind of the way it is.
Yeah.
If you only had one utensil that you could use to eat, I think it would be a spoon.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, he's the best fork I've ever met. So
absolutely.
But for me, actually, like being with the kids is time off. That's like nobody can interrupt me. You know, I don't. I know the kids argue and they fight and things like that, but that's my time off.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking maybe we would start with some good news today. Yeah, right? I mean, why not? So why don't you tell us about the award?
So I had never heard of the American Public Health Association that I'm aware of. I obviously know that there are public health associations out there and we have our own, you know, Oregon Health Authority, but it wasn't familiar to me, even as a community health worker working in public health. And but I have a really good friend and mentor who I've been working with the last year for this, you know, for CORE. And she had nominated us maybe a month or two ago, a couple months ago, for this American Public Health Association Award for community health workers. And you know, since then, I've discovered this whole world of community health workers that meet and talk regularly from around the country. And yeah, so it's been really great.
And a resource, right?
Yeah, and they have these amazing trainings and all different stuff. You know, we have a lot of networks here. There's kind of a Southern Oregon community health worker meeting, which is actually run by my previous, you know, my community health worker instructor when I went to college. And him and I became close after that class. So he runs that meeting. And then I'm involved in that. So there's other community health worker meetings that are just incredibly valuable. And this one, I mean, even more so, it's national, and you get to hear from people just from all walks of life. So I found out about that. And when she first said that she nominated us, I kind of was like, oh, and that's really cool. But I still, you know, I kind of was like, but we won't win something, you know? I don't know why. That's just what I thought. So I didn't even really, I mean, to be honest, I didn't even really look into it for like, I think 2 or 3 weeks until I think you asked me what it was. And I was like, I don't know. Let me look. And I went on and I was like, oh, that's a whole, that's a big deal.
That's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. But then I even more so was like, well, you know, there's hundreds of organizations and people that are nominated and great organizations with community health workers. And so I really still didn't, I didn't even announce it on our page or anything because I just wasn't sure if we would get it. But yeah, I got the notice yesterday, day before yesterday. I can't remember. It's kind of blurry, but so yeah, I got the notice that we won for the it's the American Public Health Association Community Health Worker Section Group Award. So there's a individual award for one community health worker, and then there's a group award for an organization or something like that. Wow. And
so congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
And it was when she sent me, Noelle is my mentor, when she sent me kind of the about the award, and it's talking about, you know, community health workers and grassroots organizations working in public health and all of that. And I thought, well, I mean, that's us for sure.
Yep. So, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So it was pretty amazing to hear that we won. I mean,
well, it's pretty amazing when you look at the organization. Before COVID started, your organization was just a dream. It was an idea that you had and had for a while and really wanted, but it was just a dream.
Well, and I kind of tucked it away. I wasn't. It was a dream, and I put a lot of work into that in the early, I think it was 2017, 2018, and then by the end of 2018, I got kind of sick. I was working in Medford, and I got really sick. I think I had a full-time job, a part-time job, and I was going to college, and
as well as having four kids.
Yeah. And Matt wasn't working at that time. Again, we've switched off a lot over the years, but he wasn't working then. And I ended up getting really sick. And it was semi-serious. And so I had to quit my job within maybe a week or two of getting sick. And I just sort of decided after that, well, it's not worth it for me to go to work. You know, my body can't handle it. And I got really kind of, depressed about it, because I really enjoy working and I enjoy doing this work. But I did get to spend a lot of time with the kids over the last couple of years, and it was really great. And we moved back over here, and, everything's been great. But, when COVID hit, I was kind of like, I don't need to just be sitting on my hands, with this great energy and experience that I can bring.
Absolutely.
So, I'm very grateful for Father Bernie for, first of all, bringing me into St. Timothy's, and second, to be honest, I don't know how much he could have stopped me, but he certainly didn't try. And I really, really love him for that.
Yeah, he is very, very supportive.
Yeah.
And, you couldn't ask for more support. It's
yeah, and, you know,
a great guy.
I know with us kind of, we talked the other day, and I know that he wants us to stay connected, and we're definitely going to stay connected to St. Tim's. Such a valuable resource to our community, but to us personally, Michelle and I have gotten so much from St. Tim's. So
absolutely. Well, congratulations on the award. I think that's absolutely amazing and wonderful. And while I am thrilled for you, I'm actually not surprised. So just know that
I was pretty surprised.
I know you were, but I'm not surprised.
I appreciate that.
So last week your team received a letter from OHA. That came to St. Tim's, and it was about the testing that you guys were doing. So do you want to talk to me a little bit about what that letter was, what that means, you know, what the impact of that is on the community?
Yeah. So, you know, we've been doing the testing now for, it's been about 3 months because, you know, we started in the basement of St. Timothy's in mid-July. You know, actually, I think Michelle and I did the first test to one of our clients. Yeah, so it's grown a lot since then. But our intention has always been to make the testing as accessible as possible to help prevent outbreaks and spread and just, you know, to prevent people from getting sick and dying in our community.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, from day one, myself, Michelle, Father Bernie, And I know that it's flourished since then. We have quite a team now. But even as far back as when it was just the three of us sort of running around in the clinic, we had decided even then we want these to be as accessible and available as possible. And over the last 3 months, you know, there have been a lot of changes with the state and with our national government as far as the vaccine mandates and just different regulations. So part of what we started seeing was, you know, there are workspaces that are required to have vaccination by, I think it's the 18th is what most entities in Oregon are required to have their full and vaccination status.
We're recording this on the 16th, so that's right. Like so two days away. Right, mm-hmm. Wow.
So technically by Monday, there are some organizations that I just heard from Beth yesterday that I think have requested extensions to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know what those are, but it looks like that some are able to get extensions. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, on the 18th is kind of when that last deadline is. So we've had a lot of folks who are, you know, still wanting to wait, or some that just don't want to get the vaccine. And in certain workspaces, you know, it's not going to be allowed after the 18th. So the option for many people has been you can either be vaccinated or if you have an exemption, you have to test twice weekly. So that's for work purposes. There's other different, you know, there's all different kinds of reasons why people come in. But for work purposes, some places have to test twice a week. And one, it was kind of burning up a lot of our tests and other places too. I mean, this is not individual to St. Timothy's at all. This mm-hmm. is happening all over the state and probably the country, I imagine. So it was burning up a lot of our tests and we were having a hard time just kind of saving some, you know, being able to conserve. And we started running low a few times where we almost ran out. And it's not like,
because these are tests for people who are choosing not to get vaccinated, right?
You mean why we were having such a rush?
Exactly.
So the situation is that they were either, you know, like I said, either they had to get vaccinated or if they chose not to and they had a exemption, they had to test twice a week. So we were having a hard time because it also means when we're testing someone, and again, you know, everywhere is having the same dilemma. When we're testing someone, we're essentially kind of enabling them to not get the vaccine in mm-hmm. these certain scenarios where they probably should be getting it because it's health-related right. circumstances. You know, if you're in the healthcare field and you're, you know, we want to know that our healthcare workers have those immunities and have that protection. And
absolutely.
It's just peace of mind.
Yep.
I'm not too concerned about my plumber. I'm not too mm-hmm. concerned about, you know, the people working on the roads. I care about them, but I'm not concerned that, you know, they're
not going to get it from them.
Right. Yes. They're not performing medical procedures in close proximity to me.
Hopefully
or should
not,
they
right?
ever? Yes. I don't know. Maybe one of them's a doctor. I don't know.
Yeah, but one never knows.
So it was kind of, you know, there was sort of it was multifaceted. We had a lot of different issues. And then another issue that came up for us was we had people coming in for events, football games, concerts, things like that. Mm-hmm. And when we went online and looked, because every time someone would come in, we would talk about it afterward, and we would kind of look it up and see online. And this is just our way of figuring, are we doing the best job we possibly know how to prevent the spread in our community?
Right.
And when you go on there and you look at the events and they say either you're vaccinated or you're getting this test beforehand. So, I mean, we came up against the same issue that we did with work. And so at that point, you know,
that basically people were using the testing as a workaround to get out of vaccine.
And we were actually, I mean, we were not balking at that at first. We didn't, you know, we didn't put up any walls. We were doing it because we figured, okay, well, it's going to prevent some spread. And, but we would tell people, you know, this isn't going to prevent you from getting it, this test. This is just to see if you have it today. This could mean something totally different tomorrow. You know,
and we don't. And if this, the load, the viral load is low
that's
enough.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
When they're getting the test right then and there.
Yeah. This test
may
is
come
good
out
for
negative,
right? Now.
Right?
That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what happened was, we had, you know, we came across that issue. We tested someone, they went to the event. 4 days later, they came in, tested positive. And so every single person in the clinic, I assume, I mean, all of us talked about it and it was pretty much everybody on the same page. We all thought, well, you know, did we enable this person to go to this event and possibly spread it or contract it there?
Right.
And it really became a kind of an ethical dilemma for us because we're not trying to enforce any will. We are only trying to prevent the spread in our community. That is our only purpose with these tests.
Right.
So we're not trying to force people to get vaccinated. But if we're seeing that our actions are possibly causing a spread, we want to address that. So, you know, we consulted with the Oregon Health Authority. Bernie did, essentially. And other places, too. Like, what are other spaces doing with this issue? And, you know, ultimately that led to Oregon Health Authority sending us a letter stating that, you know, the tests are really to support patients with symptoms or recent exposure. They're not meant to be for screening for people who are unvaccinated. It's not meant to be a screening tool to enable people to go to these events and things where it can be unsafe. So, and for that exact reason, it's good for the moment you walk out. You know, 12 to 24 hours later, that test doesn't matter anymore because anything could have happened. You could have already been sick. And so we're not here to do that. We're here to prevent, you know, kids from spreading it in the school and people from spreading it to their grandparents and their parents. And so.
And it is a valuable resource, the testing.
It is.
And we
it's
don't
not unlimited.
Want, yeah, exactly. We don't want to run short for, you know, the people who have got some symptoms or have been around somebody who has symptoms and who are legitimately interested in getting vaccinated,
you know,
at some point.
And even if not, maybe they got it and we're, you know, we want to catch that soon enough so that if they want to go down and get the monoclonal antibodies and make sure that they're not going to get really sick, we want to give them that option. But if we don't have the test, then this person is without an early treatment that could help save their life. So it is important that we have enough tests to help screen people who are, or diagnose people who are actually, you know, in trouble. You know, they're struggling.
Right.
So we want to do that, and we don't
want
to
see people.
And the tests
are free at this point. So
They are free.
That's a whole other kind of consideration is that, you know, if you know that what you're doing is basically scamming the system by, you know, getting tested twice a week, you're taking a resource that is valuable and kind of squandering it, really.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't, like, even in the clinic, I'm pretty firm that, and it's probably because I'm from this area, and so I do have somewhat of a you know, conservative lens mm-hmm. sometimes, but I, like, again, you know, it, to me, it doesn't even, the vaccine, that doesn't even weigh into my decision on this, and so I definitely don't think that people who are unvaccinated who come in to get tested shouldn't be coming in. I think everybody should be if they think that they're sick or, you know, if it's required, not required because they're not vaccinated, but required because it's required for everybody. You know, we want to make sure that if it's required for everybody, we'll give you the test. So that's why we looked up, you know, for the Oregon Ducks football games, for these concerts. Mm-hmm. We wanted to know, are these required for everybody? Because if so, then we need to be fair about it and do that. But that's not the case. And for flight, for air travel, that's kind of a tricky one. International travel requires a PCR test within 3 days, which, let me tell you, that's got to be a jungle to figure out.
Wow.
Because you have to find the test, get it scheduled 3 days before, and get your results before you get on the plane.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but, and it's not actually required for the, from the United States. So if you are leaving the United States, you are not required to get a PCR test unless the country you're going to requires one, which basically they all do. So you do, you just have to get one, I guess.
Yeah.
Domestic travel, it's not required, but certain airlines require it. Mm-hmm. And our understanding from everything we've looked at, and I've looked up quite a bit, is that if they require the test, they require it for everyone. And it can be a rapid test, but not a home test. So the ones that are requiring it require it regardless of vaccine status. So we just, we give it. So we give it. And that makes sense. We don't know why people are traveling and it's possibly essential. And it's not really our job to figure that out. So yeah, there's
essential
a lot of nuances.
Can be defined in so many interesting ways.
Right.
You know, I mean, like as a mom who hasn't seen her daughter in
almost two years,
it's like, it's kind of essential that I see my daughter sometime in the next few months.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
I mean, people have things that they have to do and we, you know, want to make sure that they're being as safe as possible.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's kind of
all right. So the letter came in. Have you been telling people about this? Has it had, you know, are you getting blowback? I mean, what's it?
Well, yeah.
That's what I
figured. we've gotten blowback. I mean, it hasn't certainly come to arms yet, but there's been some tense moments.
Way.
Yeah, right. We try to de-escalate, and you know, Bernie's really great at just sort of letting these things come naturally and just sort of having a chill conversation about it. So But it has not been, you know, it's not been without its difficult conversations for all of us. And we've all had the conversation with somebody by now. So I think that for the most part, you know, people do understand, but there's frustration because, you know, with the employment stuff and even with the events, they don't, they won't accept a home test. So it's not as though, I understand the frustration. It's not as though we can say, well, you know, you can pay for your own test because maybe they actually can't. And I don't have an answer for that. I just know that for us, we know that, I mean, we've told several people that we were seeing on a regular basis, you know, this isn't going to prevent you from getting it. And you are going to come in here at some point and test positive. It's just, I mean, maybe you won't get super sick from it or anything, but you know, you're going to test positive eventually. And, you know, everybody that I know that was coming in on a regular basis, well, most of them have tested positive at some point. And so it's not unreasonable to know, to say that to someone that, you know, this isn't something that we should be doing. And so I appreciate Oregon Health Authority kind of putting it into words for us that makes sense and that we're able to kind of show to people and help explain. And it does take a little pressure off of us because it is coming from Oregon Health Authority. Mm-hmm. And even though we kind of wanted some kind of wording or some kind of guidance, this isn't exclusive to us. So it's everywhere. This is probably going to be standard. And our local hospital already doesn't test without a doctor's order. So
I mean, they never have.
Well, yeah.
Since the beginning of this, which is, you know, kind of mind blowing to me, because that was the whole thing. It was like for the first year of COVID, we're scratching our heads saying, but we can't get tested in Curry.
Right. Which is, I mean, that's essentially why we were like, well, we'll start testing. We'll do that. But yeah, so we started much more open with it. And so we've had to kind of make sure that we're not causing an issue with our testing.
Right.
So we're trying to find happy mediums. And, you know, I know that the hospital has been a lot more restrictive. And I'm not sure what there's been some changes lately with that. And I'm not sure what all of those are. But you can drive up for testing now.
So how is the how's the stress level with the team? Like, you guys must be, I can't imagine. So you know, 4 or 5 months ago, before you started doing this testing, and before you were on the front line, basically.
Yeah, and even before we had the vaccines, probably.
Right. It was a very different world for you, right?
Yeah.
And now your team is like, I mean, every day you're kind of dealing with the fallout and the stress. And I mean, what's it like, and how are you guys coping?
Well, yeah, it's definitely been a lot of different angles that we've seen, you know. I mean, just very frankly, we've seen a lot of human suffering from a lot of directions. And, you know, whether it's us dealing with the housing shortage and the fallout from that, and COVID, and the mixture of the two, which is just this whole other thing. So, you know, I think that we've certainly seen a lot in the last year and a half, and it compounds with us working in the clinic, because it almost sometimes feels like it just doesn't let up.
Right.
So I know that, you know, a lot of us have had a lot of stress lately, like everybody else.
Yep.
And we've had to kind of find some coping mechanisms over the last few weeks, but it's not all resolved. You know, we had a meeting the other day where we kind of talked about how all of us are, it's not that we're bitter. It's just that there's a part of us that is kind of pessimistic sometimes, and it gets in the way of how we're delivering services. And we recognize it, we see it, we don't always know what to do with that, but we talk about it together. And, you know, I think we all have our own type of mental health, whether it's actually seeing a therapist on a weekly or monthly basis, or, you know, I have a mentor that I see a few times a month. And then we have our weekly meetings at St. Tim's, and we process a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not easy.
And really, you know, that you have to, because as a team, you know, you guys are on the front lines. I mean, you guys are dealing with sick people who come in and are testing positive. You're kind of face to face with the virus.
Yeah,
and I just can't even imagine being face to face with the virus. It just, you know,
so
it's a little bit anxiety provoking for me.
At first it was. I mean, I got to tell you, there was actually one time in the beginning when I really, really appreciate Bernie and how he doesn't take offense when I'm a little bit neurotic. or a lot neurotic. And so in the beginning, I was a lot, you know, I was like, this is really serious. And it is serious. It's serious still now, but we've been able to develop routines and different ways of making sure we're safe and we're keeping each other safe. But in the beginning, we just weren't sure about something. So I tend to be much, much, much more constrictive and then loosen up.
Yes.
And I think Bernie was too for Bernie, but mm-hmm. it wasn't as restrictive as I probably am. And so, right. you know, there was at one point when I didn't yell at Bernie, but I think there was at one point when I was like, we, you know, we have to start on time. We can't start early because not everybody's ready. And, you know, so it was very stressful and tense because, you know, like you are going to see people who are COVID positive. In fact, today we were talking about that. I think we've had one day in the, you know, it's been maybe 100 days.
3 months easily.
We've been doing it. Yeah. And that doesn't even seem like a lot, but it's been a lifetime in that 3 months.
It has.
And yeah. And so in 100 days, we've had one day, and 100 give or take, you know, mm-hmm. we've had one day where there was no positives. And so, I mean, for us, what that means is absolutely, we are going to see someone with COVID in the clinic. Without a doubt, you know.
Yes.
Because that's it just has been that way. So today we actually had a very low amount of people. There were more people in getting a vaccine than there were testing for COVID. We had 10 people test today, just super light and two positive. Okay. And so, you know, that there's 20%, but that's a pretty small amount of people. It's pretty easy to get a high percentage with 10 people. So, one in particular was very, very sick. And so I'm really concerned and I hope that we hear back good news.
Because that's the thing is you've actually had people die. You've had people that you've tested.
Yeah. Die. All of us, I think.
You personally tested.
I've had people that I tested. I had a young woman who almost did. Who I tested, very young woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost the same age as my daughter. Mm-hmm. And then of course there was a woman that I gave results to a couple weeks ago. Someone I did an in-home test with, and then another person that came into the clinic. And so there's been several that I've tested or given the news to that are no longer here. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, I mean, every time that happens,
that should be sobering. Strange. That should be a sobering, you know, for all of us. That should be a sobering thought.
But it's kind of a faceless person to everybody else. And so I still think that there are some who in hearing that, it's not really going to make a lot of sense. It's not going to resonate with them.
Yep.
But, you know, I know their faces. I've talked with them. One of them has been good friends with my mother for a long, long time. And I didn't find out till after she passed away, her daughter told me. And so, I mean, it's a very small town. We are a small community. Mm-hmm. And we all know at least one person, I'm sure, that's passed away from COVID. And, you know, recently there was someone who's kind of a little more well-known in town who had passed away. So, and my understanding was that the funeral was quite large. There was a lot of people who knew this person. So
I hope they were masked.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't there. So.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's still Brookings.
I know, but honest to Pete, right? You're going to the funeral of somebody who died from this thing and you don't wear a mask. I don't know what to think. I mean, I went to Freddy's the other night, you know, and I'm thinking, all right, it was like 7:30 at night. I'm thinking, all right, I should be able to go into Freddy's. I hadn't been there. I had not been inside for at least 6 months. Should be able to go this time of the day, probably not very many people there. Theoretically, you know, everybody will be masked because everybody knows that's the mandate, right? You know, I know. How did I get to 71 years of age being so completely naive? I don't know. But in truth, you know, while all of the employees were masked, the customers were not. I mean, there was at least half that were unmasked. And
that's been my experience too. What did you, I mean, did you talk to anyone? Did anything happen?
Yeah, I cornered one of the managers and I said, you know, so I'm appalled. Here, because half of your customers are not masked, and you've got this recording that goes on that says, you know, Freddy's believes in, you know, having all of our people masked.
That's funny.
And
I've heard it. I think I tune it out, but I've heard it.
Yeah. No, I heard it twice while I was there, right? And I'm thinking,
you're looking around.
Right, exactly. Like, are these other people not hearing this, or are they
probably
just
not.
Like, yeah, whatever, you know? And he said that the one of the problems was the fact that our board of commissioners for the county had written a letter to our governor saying that they were not going to enforce the mandates.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, I wonder if Pash, Boyce, and Herzog actually understand the damage they've done.
I don't think so. I mean, because that essentially takes all of the authority away from the managers and the store itself enforce something that is state, you know, a state mandate.
Right? I mean,
what an awful position to be in.
What an awful position, yes, for our board of commissioners to put people into.
Yeah, that did frustrate me a lot because, I mean, at the time that that happened, that was kind of at the height of when, I mean, that was when we were testing 120, 130 people a day. I was exhausted. We were all exhausted. And and just hearing
that,
I was livid.
What the healthcare workers who are working in a hospital and there's a demonstration out front. I mean, it's like.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What is the disconnect here?
I was so upset. I don't think I could even, I couldn't even write anything to any of the commissioners at the time.
Yep.
And. And it, again, it's not because I'm like, everybody should be forced to do this thing. It's just, I mean, first of all, the masks. Yes. I think that masks, that is not unreasonable. It's really not. My kids wear them. They have no issue with them. Everybody's talking about how, like, it's so sad that kids have to wear it. My kids enjoy it, weirdly enough. I mean, has nobody ever taken a kid trick-or-treating? Kids love masks.
I know.
So my kids don't.
No, what they don't like is somebody telling them what to do. That's
the entire issue
with themselves or with their kids. They don't want anybody telling them what to do. Well, I have news for you. When you live in a civilized society, people tell you what to do.
Yeah.
They're called rules or laws or mandates or, I mean, you can call them a whole bunch of things, but that's what civilizations have, are rules.
And really the fact of the matter is it's just a mask. And it really, doctors and surgeons and nurses have been wearing them for years and years, hundreds of years.
All day long without complaining. I know.
It's not even comparable to the vaccine where you are injecting something into your body. And I understand that people have that concern for themselves, but we're talking about a mask. And I disagree with the commissioners on that. I mean, huge.
No, completely. It's so frustrating. So OHA was at St. Tim's today.
Yeah, they were. The camera crew was there.
The camera crew. I love that.
Okay. So I got to meet Rachel, who everybody else seemed to know. So, Jason and Bernie and everybody. I met her and she was lovely. Everybody was so nice. And there was a couple of guys there that were kind of had the camera tech and they were interviewing a few people and mostly taking a lot of video footage. So they're making... You know, they made a quick PSA not maybe 3 weeks ago with Bernie. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think it was about 3 weeks ago. So they made that. Mm-hmm. And then this one, they're actually going to do, she said this one's going to be like a more edited sort of professional video style. Mm-hmm. So, or movie style. So they're going to be putting that together over the next couple weeks and airing it. And I assume they'll send us a copy.
Wonderful.
It was great. They didn't come to the testing side, though. They were here to really make the PSAs for the vaccination clinic.
Right.
But, they got a lot of Lauren and probably some of Bernie. And I don't think they got me. I think I did pretty well at staying out of the camera.
No profile.
Right. But I have a really, really good friend named Bill who he's lived here pretty, you know, he's lived around here his whole life. My parents knew him before I was born, and he ended up, he was actually our babysitter, kind of nanny, for most of my young life. And so he just happened to be there to get his other shot. So I was talking with him, and then they ended up, you know, he's a veteran. He had his, his hat on with that and all of his stuff. And, you know, I think they were kind of wanting to interview someone who really people in Curry County could relate to, someone, you know, from here. Well, Bill is definitely that, you know, he's very Curry County and he's just a lovely person. Yeah. So they interviewed him, or at least got some footage. And then Eric came in, my son. So he just turned 12 a few weeks ago. And he came in to get his second shot. He got his first shot on his birthday or the day after. And he came in for a second shot today. And so they we knew about it ahead of time. So Matt went and got him a brand new white shirt because we didn't have anything not stained or painted on. And literally got the shirt on the way to the event so that he didn't get it dirty. And then they got there and it was too early. So they were serving lunch. St. Tim's was serving lunch. Yeah. And there was spaghetti. And I was like, please, just do me this one favor. Don't get your shirt dirty yet. He didn't, though. He did a good job. And
that's great.
So they even gave him
spaghetti, of all things, right?
Yes, I know. I was like, what are the odds?
Yeah.
And he loves spaghetti, so but they actually mic'd him up. I think he was
good.
They might have mic'd up Lauren too, but I think as far as the people they were interviewing, Eric I think was the only one. They did a lot of footage of him. He thought it was hilarious.
Oh, I think that's great.
And then I afterward walked in and he was checking out their $35,000 equipment. And like trying
to hold
it. And,
right? Being very careful.
The cameraman was trying to oblige, but was also kind of like, don't touch the lens.
Yes. And please don't like push this button and this button and this button all at one time because,
Now, I don't know if when he said 25, 35, I don't know if he meant 100 or 1,000. And I didn't ask him the rest.
Oh, no, 1,000, honey. 1,000. Well, how big was the camera?
It was, you know, I mean, it was a, you can't even see.
Yeah, 1,000.
It was very large. And there was these wonderful little panels that they, screens, you know, that they were walking around with where they could see what the camera was seeing.
Oh, yeah.
So Eric had them, when I walked in, he was having them put one in front of the other so that it was this video of a train of screens. You know, he just, he's just.
So I don't know. Eric may just have found the thing that he's going to do for the rest of his life. I mean, you know.
He loves electronic equipment very much.
Well, so. Videography is quite a field to get into. So
that, so that'd it be was great. It was a great experience for him. And they asked him.
That's excellent.
I think they said, why, you know, why did you choose to get the vaccine? And he just said, because I don't want to die.
Good for
him. So kids are very honest, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for him.
So, yeah, it was great.
Good. Good. And, you know, one of the other things I wanted to touch on today, because I actually made a list of the things to talk about. I know, right? Because, last week.
Yeah.
We forgot.
Yep. We forgot.
Yeah. So I actually made the list this time. I know. Because there's a city council coming, council meeting coming up on the 25th of October.
See, I forgot about that. It's a good thing you put that on the list.
Well, I forgot to go to the last city council meeting. It's like, I don't know what happened to my
brain
on Monday. I totally spaced it out. I have no idea.
I figured you went.
So it was like, no, I went, you know, then about 3 days later, I went, oh, there was a city council meeting. I missed that.
Yeah. Well, you know,
so this one,
too exciting.
Yeah, this one, they're going to deal with two issues, both of which I think are very important.
Yes.
They're both changes to the Brookings Municipal Code. The first one deals with accessory dwelling units, and what they're doing is changing the code to take out the part that's already in the code that says that they are for the purpose of making ADU rentals address the housing shortage. Mm-hmm. And they're taking that wording out.
The affordable part is what they're...
The affordable, they're taking that out. And I understand that their reasoning is that they think that wording is making actually doing ADUs less attractive to a homeowner.
Mm-hmm. Do you think so?
Number one, I think that's not true at all. I don't think that's true. But the second thing is that if you're not ensuring that the ADUs are rentable by the people who actually need the housing in this community, then what's the point?
Well, and I'm not saying this was the direct intention of the city council, but it's very convenient that they choose not to move on our short-term rental issue that has become this growing trend, and now they're taking that specification off the ADUs. It's really going to set us up nicely for a lot of short-term rentals that are completely unaffordable to locals.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And in what way, shape, or form does that even begin to deal with our affordable housing crisis?
Nothing. It does nothing.
Not a thing. And it's remarkable to me that they completely missed the boat on this. Mm-hmm. I mean, they completely have the wrong end of the stick. It's not about a free marketplace, people. That's not what the issue is. Our free marketplace is perfectly healthy. Mm-hmm. What's not healthy is the housing. That's not healthy.
And you know, I was on Facebook earlier today, this morning, and like we've seen, I don't even know, I've lost count of the times I've seen a post for someone looking for housing.
Yep.
And you probably saw the same one I saw. A family.
I haven't been there today,
kids.
But yes.
Oh, well,
but I
you'll
see them every
see
day. I see them every day.
And I think this is not the first post by this particular gentleman and family. And it's the story itself. Had this person come to Brookings 5 years ago with this story, or even we'll say two and a half years ago with this story, you know, they would have been able to find something. And I know because we did, you know, we're coming with this story. We have work already, you know, lined up before we get here. Because Matt actually had a transfer position before we moved over here. And, you know, we've got several kids, a couple of animals. We need to find a large place. We're not too picky on the rent because we know it's a short market. And so we found a place. And it's not, it's 150% of the rent we paid in Medford for a much larger space. And we recognize that, you know, as norm now. Right. So had this particular gentleman requested, you know, with the same scenario 2 years ago, he probably could have found something. But today, I just, and I'm an optimist, but it's very unlikely, highly unlikely he'll find what he needs here.
Yep.
It depends on how long he's willing to wait and how much time he has, because
is he already living in the community, or are they waiting?
I don't
to
remember
get things lined up.
I don't
because
remember,
that's but... that's the real heartbreaker for me is when they've already moved here.
And I feel like that thinking, might be the scenario. Yeah.
Yeah, thinking that they'll certainly
yeah, once I
be
get
able
there,
to
I'll
sort
find
it
something.
Out, right?
Which is normally true.
Right?
Normally even in a terrible market.
Yes. Yeah.
If you stay long enough. But there are people who have said, you know, I've been looking for a year and I moved out. And we know we've been working with people who are here for 6, 9, 12 months or more, and then they have to leave because they're still living in their van, and now they've lost other things because,
and
you know,
and
when
news flash, this is not just poor people we're talking about.
No,
these are traveling doctors and nurses and health professionals that cannot find an affordable place to live.
Right,
people, we got to wake up about this. We are in a crisis. And it just feels like the city council has the complete wrong end of the stick.
I think somebody actually mentioned that at this point, when somebody posts something looking for housing, it just turns into a conversation where everybody is on the same side. Everybody in the community is on the same side of this issue. And they're all saying, you know, that this is egregious and that this is an awful situation to be in. And somebody mentioned that, well, we need to tell the city council. Actually, I think they were a lot stronger. You'll have to see it. It was quite a bit stronger than that wording. But that we, you know, need to tell the city council basically that this is the issue because they don't seem to care. And they were referencing the lack of action on the short-term rentals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is not a conversation that anyone is pushing. This is a conversation that's happening naturally in our community and needs to be taken notice of by our city council and addressed. Because, you know,
because
they say
every single planning commission meeting, every single one, there is on the agenda, there is approval for turning a long-term
at least
rental
one
into a short. At least one.
I usually see two.
Yep.
I usually see two at every meeting. And I think there's, I think we I just saw one, I'm pretty sure, but.
Oh, yeah. It was the last planning meeting. There was one.
Yeah. It's not that it's an issue. It's that it's a trend. And trends are just as important as crisis issues. Because we're also talking about, you know, remember how we talked before about the upstream, you know, when we're seeing these dead bodies floating down the river.
Yes.
And instead of going to figure out what's happening and trying to prevent people from dying, we're just taking the bodies out and burying them.
Right.
Well,
right.
You know, eventually
let's find out what's causing them to end up
in
the river, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. I mean, walk up 150 feet, take a look at what's going on, figure it out. And this council could do that.
They could. But they're not motivated. They're not motivated. They're absolutely sure. Well, I look at the council and I don't see anybody up there who's struggling. So, you know, for one thing, right? They're not struggling.
Yeah, they're not. So. They're disconnected. And I don't say that in a mean way, because it's not mean to say that somebody is disconnected from an issue that they are disconnected from.
Yeah.
I am disconnected from many issues. Before we started the clinic, I didn't really understand. I understood pretty well for someone over here in Brookings. I understand the issue about as well as anybody could who's on the ground. But actually being in the clinic, being in that environment, I recognize how little I knew before, even though I had a pretty good grasp of the situation. So, you know, people
and if
don't
you go into it with a mindset, which I think several of the counselors already have a mindset about housing and you know, what's affordable and what's out there and available. So if you go in, then basically what you're getting is confirmation bias. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And that's what you see.
And I would wish of our leadership to not set themselves up as the highest authority on any issue.
Really?
And that we all go into this situation, anybody in any position of leadership, which I now consider myself in, although it is not government leadership, that we keep an open mind. And it is not, it's not a failing on the city council and the council members themselves, not just the council as a whole, but it is not a failing on, you know, Brad and John and Ron and Ed and Michelle. It's not a failing on them to not understand the issue. The failing is setting themselves up as experts in the issue and not hearing what we're saying. I think that any leadership that would say to me in words or actions that my mind is able to be changed, that's a leader I want to work with. And I appreciate how Jake showed us how that could happen. And regardless of what his intention was throughout that whole process, that's what it showed us, is that, you know, his mind was able to be changed. And all of us should be of that thought.
Yes, yes, yes. Because that's called critical thinking. And we should all be capable of critical thinking.
And
we should all be willing to entertain the possibility that we don't have all of the answers.
Doesn't it almost invite conversation when you come into the situation and you're kind of tense and you're thinking, what side is this person on? And they say to you, my mind is not made up. I'm able to change my mind. It almost says to me like, hey, I have a chance of communicating with you.
Yes,
And that's what I wish for our city council.
Yes.
That's what I wish for our county leadership.
Yep.
I think that in order for them to get there, for us to get there and to be able to have actual conversations, not this whole, well, we gave you the opportunity to speak.
Right.
You know, as Bernie put, it's like asking, do I want a punch to the gut or a punch to the head?
Exactly.
That's not a choice. So
exactly.
Until they come to that space, I feel like we're going to miss out on a lot of productive conversation. But should they choose
because
to come to that space?
You can't say to your constituents, well, we gave you a chance to speak. Well, no, you actually didn't. You gave me a chance to say my piece, but you didn't give me a chance to actually have a conversation about this where we could both give and take.
And maybe this is the way this had to go, you know, and we're kind of talking definitely about the upcoming issue with when they're going to pass this ordinance now, or the change to the BMC that states we have to get St. Timothy's will have to get a conditional use permit. And they have chosen not to go that route. And I agree and appreciate that.
Right.
But it won't end well for the city,
nope.
I think.
Nope.
And
in effect, when it doesn't end well for the city, it doesn't end well for the taxpayers.
And I would definitely hope that people are aware of that this is happening and that this, you know, may end up in lawsuit against the city. And that's where it looks like it's headed. So
yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And guaranteed the city's not going to win.
Well,
this one.
You know, historically, governments haven't won over churches very often.
No.
And when it comes to something as simple as feeding the poor,
I just
don't think that they have a leg to stand on.
And just the visuals of that, guys, you're on the wrong side of history on this. You really want to stand up against feeding the hungry? This just, wow.
So,
Diana, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but, do you see the little note that's coming
it's
up?
It's gone now, out of sight.
Well, it's gone right this minute, but I can guarantee.
Object permanence.
I can guarantee you it will be back up in no time at all.
I figured he would have put another one just to
I know. Just to mess with us, right? So we'll talk more next week, obviously.
Yeah.
And we'll see, we'll see how this shakes out. But, I wanna thank you for everything that you do, because you continue to put yourself out there. And I think it's the measure of a true leader who is willing to just keep putting themselves out, keep putting themselves out there, and you do that, and I really appreciate that. So,
well, I'm definitely congratulations. Called to do it.
Yes, congratulations on your award.
Yes,
and
we'll find a way to celebrate.
Yeah, there we go. And I want to thank our listeners for listening. Really appreciate you having the open mind that you do to listen. So, show up at the city council meeting or write an email to the council. Maybe we can get things changed. This is Candace Michelle for Our Community.